This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast, where I talk to my guests about the benefits they've experienced in sobriety. Because we all know that going sober isn't easy, but it does make life a lot easier. And today I'm talking to Caitlin. It is amazing to see you. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you? You're approaching 1,000 days, aren't you?
I am, yeah. Gosh, today's 989 days.
You know, I've actually counted to when this goes out. It's going to go out the day after your 1,000th day.
Is it? Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, that's like a little birthday treat.
It is like having two birthdays, isn't it?
It is. Or we call it, you know, you have your belly button birthday and you have the day you were reborn.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and I do feel like that. I do feel like I was reborn the day I got sober.
Yeah, I think I do as well, actually. That's a beautiful way of looking at it.
Yeah. I like that too. Gosh, there's so many different meanings to different words since I've come in recovery. Have you found that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you went through, I've sort of looked at some of the things you've sent through. You went through a 12-step program.
I did get sober through a 12-step fellowship. I tried getting sober by myself quite a few times. You know, I tried a bit of counselling, but typical alcoholic addict, I wasn't honest. I never was really honest with anybody about how much I was using and what I was doing and how much of an impact it was having in my life. And I'd looked up the 12 steps probably about 5 years before I actually went into recovery. And I looked at it and I thought, there's no way I can do that. That is not for me. I thought it was going to be really religious. I just didn't really understand. Just reading them doesn't really give you a clear understanding of what they entail. So I saw them and I thought, no, absolutely not. And to be honest, that kind of worked well for me, finding things that I could pick out about and pick apart, because it gave me a reason to carry on doing what I was doing. Yeah. Because I was like, well, no, I can't do that. So, okay, cool, I'll carry on. And that was really a theme for me throughout, you know, it was a good 20 years that I was actively drinking and using illegal substances. And there were many, many times when things would pop up and be literally screaming at me, you've got a problem, you've got a problem. But I would always find a way around it.
Yeah.
I would always find a reason why I couldn't stop or why I didn't need to.
Yeah, that's the big one, isn't it? It's the didn't need. Oh, no, I'm fine.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I did a podcast the other day and I was talking about how I think I was 18 and I read Daniela Westbrook's autobiography, and there were parts in there that I really saw myself in even at 18. And I just, you know, when you look at somebody like her, I mean, she's an amazing woman. She's been through an awful lot. But when you look at that compared to where my life was, it was easy to say, I'm not as bad as her.
Yeah.
And I'd read another book around the same time, actually. I don't know if you've read it. You may well have done. It's called Rachel's Holiday by Marion Keyes.
Yes, I have read that book. I read that in sobriety, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, it was a lovely book.
Really good book. But again, I was about 18 and I read it. And, you know, the character Rachel clearly has a problem, but she's in complete denial. And I was reading it, agreeing with everything this character was saying. I was like, yeah, she's absolutely fine. She's just partying. She's exactly like me. Until it got to the part when she realizes, actually, I've got a really bad problem here, and she seeks help. And that's at the point where I separated myself.
Isn't that interesting? I was going to ask you how you felt then when she, because this is a novel. It's a really, really good book, actually. But that is the point where you go, right, okay, I can either really see myself in this person or I've now got to step back.
Yeah, and I think it's something that, alcoholics and addicts, do you mind me using that word, addict? I mean, there's been times throughout my sobriety when I've considered whether or not still calling myself an alcoholic addict is, I mean, am I reinforcing this negative thinking into my mind? But I kind of come to the conclusion that, you know what, I am that. That is what I am, because it's not just about what you pick up to use. It's about the behaviors and the thinking around life as a whole, and what leads us to using those substances. And if I don't look after myself, according to my 12-step program, I can easily go back to those really unhealthy ways of thinking. And although I'm not actively using alcohol and drugs, I still have to really watch myself, particularly with food. That's one I find very difficult. I've always had a bit of a control issues around that. So it's either not eating enough or eating way too much and not being able to stop myself. And I really noticed that with sugar earlier in the year. I just came to the decision I had to cut it out, because I really noticed the same behaviors. I'd wake up in the morning, make a solemn promise to myself that I was not going to eat any biscuits, I was not going to eat any sugar. And by 9:30, I'm half a packet deep in a packet of biscuits with my cup of tea. And I can't stop myself. And I just keep going and going until I feel sick.
Yeah.
So whilst I'm not using those substances that will kill me, I can still have tendencies and behaviors as an addict. So I think for me, it's really important that I do recognize that that's what I am. It reminds me that I need to work my program to stay well.
Yeah. And it keeps, the realistic view of how bad things got. I mean, I haven't actually heard your story yet, but for most people, the reason they want to walk away from alcohol or from anything is because it gets bad. And then as time goes on, you can gloss over it, you can forget it, you can start romanticizing alcohol. So, however, you keep that fresh in your mind that this is what I'm doing, this is better for me, and alcohol is not something I want to go back to, whatever works.
Yeah, I think it's really important what you just said about, our minds can romanticize, because there's been a few times. Listen, I'm sober. I've been sober for over 2.5 years, and no, I don't ever want to go back to that life. But there are definitely times where my head can say to me, oh, wouldn't that be lovely? A nice, glass of red wine with your roast dinner and have a lovely, cozy little afternoon with the family and watching a film. But reality is, it was never like that.
Yeah, and that's the key, isn't it?
It was never like that. If I had a glass of wine, it would have been before, whilst I was cooking it. I would have finished that. You would have had to go and get me some more, and then I'd be making calls for other things as well. My children would be left by themselves watching TV, and I'd be hiding upstairs. It was never that lovely image that my mind likes to tell me it was.
It's that marketing of, have this glass of X. And then you are going to experience this. Well, it just doesn't work out like that.
Not for me, no. And look, there are people who can. I'm quite careful not to sort of demonize drink and drugs, because actually, some people can use them and have a whale of the time and put them down, and that's fine. Unfortunately, that isn't me. That's not to say I didn't have some amazing times, because I really did. But ultimately, it's about where it takes me to. And although I might look back at, a time of my life, or even a day of my life, and think that was so fun. I was doing this and this, and it was a really great day. It was like, yeah, but Kate, when did that stop and when did it end? Because I might feel like, yeah, that concert was amazing. Like, that was brilliant. I had a great time. But what I forget to tell myself is that that lasted for 3 days, and I didn't go to work, I didn't pick my kids up, and I was an absolute mess. It's important for me to remember where I came from.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your drinking then. When did you start? You said you connected with Daniela Westbrook, her story, when you were quite young. Were you drinking quite young?
I think I was, although it seemed really normal to me, and I don't know if that was again the delusion of the alcoholic telling themselves that this is fine. But I remember drinking in year five, not not excessively, but I remember it was quite normal. It wasn't anything weird. And I'd say by the age I was sort of 13, 14, I was drinking regularly.
Young. I mean, when you think you've got kids
It
now, you look at it and you go, my goodness, how old are your children, if you don't mind me asking?
It's wild. They are 17, 13, and 5. The 17-year-old will have the odd drink, but it's funny, she's not bothered, which is blows my mind because that was not me at all. By her age, I was out partying 5 nights a week. I couldn't sit still. You know, within the 12 steps, there's a saying that the addict alcoholic is restless, irritable, and discontent. And that was absolutely me to a T. If I wasn't out partying, I would be climbing the walls, and I would be smoking a lot. I couldn't be sober. I really struggled by the time I was my daughter's age. And you know, she had a party a little while ago. In fact, I say a little while ago, it was September last year. And she had some vodka and it's still there. And I that blows my mind because that
Wow.
wasn't me, but boy, am I grateful. I'm really, really grateful. So yeah, I don't think she does anything more than a normal teenager.
I mean, that's so just, I mean, I just mentioned that just because now I've got children, I look, even though I was drinking when I had children, I look at them and I think, I would not want you to drink the way that I was drinking so habitually at the end of each day, relying on it to relax, to unwind, to celebrate. It was just, I wouldn't have wanted them to do it. And my eldest is 13, coming up 14. Now, I don't think I started drinking until I was late teens anyway. But I don't want her normalizing alcohol. And I think we go some way to sort of removing that when we're sober in the house ourselves, don't we?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. And actually, somebody said to me the other day when they asked me how my daughter was, they said, "Oh, have you been out drinking with her yet?" And to be honest, I was like, "No, absolutely not," because she was starting to get to an age when I did get sober where that was about to become a reality. You know, I probably would have dragged her along with me because, as much as, you know, I only ever wanted to be a good mum. That was my biggest wish for life. Drinking and everything else I was doing made me be somebody I didn't want to be. And I was, you know, really starting to notice she's gonna really pick up on what I'm doing soon. And I just don't want that. And it's not to say that that's wasn't what I'd wanted for a really long time, because now I didn't want them to see what I was up to and to see how I was and to be the mother that I was. But I genuinely believe that for me, it was just my time, because I'd wanted to get sober for years and years and years. I didn't want to live the life I was living, but I couldn't stop. It didn't matter. You know, people say to me quite often, "Oh, you've got such good willpower." And I'm like, if I had really good willpower, I wouldn't have ended up where I ended up. I might be strong-willed in other areas of my life, but when it comes to this, I lost control. I didn't have that power within me to say no to the first one or to stop once I'd started. And I just didn't want to be one of those parents who gets wasted with their kids and introduces them to things that they might not have been introduced to otherwise.
I feel exactly the same. And I've shared on the podcast before about I didn't want me coming home with a bottle of Prosecco or a bottle of wine, and then I'll be perfectly honest, I didn't want to share it.
Yeah, I mean, I used to talking about sharing it, something I did used to do, and I'm sure that some people will be able to relate who are listening to this, but I would have secret stashes so that I didn't have to share because, you know, like you said, if somebody had brought over one bottle of wine and we had to share that, I'd be climbing the walls. There's no way. That's not even going to touch the sides.
Would
And
you
I'm
have been
going
like
to.
that when you saw it? So, like, somebody turns up with a bottle of wine, you're thinking, is that it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, same
Yeah.
here.
I would have probably purposefully gotten through it really quickly so that I could have still gone to the shop.
Yeah.
And in actual fact, what I usually used to do was I'd say, oh, I'll pay if you go. Because I didn't actually want anybody outside of my home to see the states that I would get myself into.
So you were quite secretive with your drinking then.
I was, yeah. And it's funny because when I came into sobriety, I didn't think that drinking was part of my problem, which is insane because it clearly was. And as I, you know, the first few days of sobriety and I'm clearing up the house, I'm finding empty vodka bottles in my wardrobe and things like that. It's like, okay, Kate, maybe, maybe this really is part of your problem. And, you know, quite often, drinking and substances go hand in hand.
Yeah.
So if I start drinking, I'm definitely going to do that. Therefore, alcohol is part of my problem. I felt deeply, deeply unhappy to my core. And it's something that I can see. Even when I go back to looking at my childhood, I was like that. I was not ever a happy person. I was not content. I couldn't sit with myself. I think my first addiction was probably fantasizing. I used to immerse myself in fairy tales and Disney films, and I would take myself off into these complete other realms within my mind because being me wasn't okay. And that's, you know, I've really learned since I've been sober to be able to sit with myself. And that is wonderful.
It
I
is.
actually really enjoy being on my own now. It's a far cry from before, you know. It took a bit of getting used to, but being on my own used to be the perfect excuse. That was literally the perfect excuse. And now, when I am by myself, my first thought is, I can have a bath, I can do a nice meditation, I can do a little bit of relaxing yoga. It's a far cry
Love it.
than before, but I love that. And you know, you're younger and you see somebody at a restaurant and they're sitting by themselves and you think, oh my God, what a loser. Why would they want to do that? And now I'm like, listen, I'm here for taking myself a lunch. It's really nice. That peace that I feel inside is just, yeah, it's just such a far cry from the person I used to be.
What do you think you were scared of, in being still and being present with yourself?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I think I feared everything. I was in a constant state of fear, and I do think that, you know, this is something that I was born with a predisposition to, but I do think that certain life experiences exacerbated how I felt and why I did what I did. And I think as a child, I definitely felt a great sense of abandonment and not being good enough, not being lovable, being bad. You know, all these things. And I do wonder if those sort of festered in within me. But yeah, I don't really know why I couldn't sit with myself. And one thing I have learned though is that there is a really strong link between alcoholism and addiction and ADHD.
So, are you diagnosed ADHD?
I'm on a waiting list to be diagnosed.
I was going to say, because as somebody, I am ADHD, so
Yeah.
autistic ADHD. I do recognize. I was wondering about that restlessness, and
Yeah.
you know, as a child, wanting to take yourself off into a fantasy world and dopamine seeking activities. You know, as everybody says, self-diagnosis is valid. I think we know
Yeah.
ourselves better than anybody. I think you know.
I think we do, and I notice so many of the traits in myself. And it's funny actually because my son is autistic. He has a diagnosis of that. And when we were going through all of that, and they were asking questions about me, and I was thinking, I really feel like this is some of this is me. Like I've always felt as though I've not been understood. People don't understand me. I think I'm quite difficult for people to perhaps read. I was always told as I was growing up, like, the way you said that was so rude, or the way you did that was not right, or the way you think about that, that's wrong. And it's always sort of stayed with me that I have upset people with the way that I speak or say or do things, or sometimes I really like things to be a certain way. And I feel like the inside of me is crying out that this is not because I'm selfish or self-centered or unkind or unloving or any of those things, because actually, if I describe myself to be the opposite of those things, something in me, I believe, is not quite average.
We don't want to be average.
No, I
It's
don't.
it sounds very, very likely, doesn't it? I think you've self-diagnosed. I mean, the odds go up when you've got relatives or you've had children and they've been diagnosed. I can't remember what the percentage is if your parents are, because I was asked when I went through diagnosis if my parents are. And since then, Mum and I have had a chat and we think that she's neurodivergent and we think that Dad was as
Yeah.
well. So, I mean, it is probably quite likely, but it's not that you're different, although you will have been treated probably like you're different. I know I was. So it's just that some areas you haven't fitted in the right box in the education system, or you haven't been understood. But at least these days, people are more understanding.
Yeah, and I think, a lot of the reason why I did use drink and drugs was because I really wanted to fit in and I really wanted people to like me. And if I was using those substances, I could be a much more confident, bolder version of myself. I could be the person who I created in my mind that I wanted to be.
Yeah.
Whereas if I was sober, that self-centered fear and insecurity about myself just took over, and I couldn't listen to that constant internal dialogue telling me how unworthy I was. Does
How
that
have
make
you dealt with
sense?
that? Yeah, it really does. How have you dealt with that in sobriety? You say you're now really comfortable sitting with yourself. How did you get to that point?
Well, I mean, look, I'm in a 12-step fellowship and I work a 12-step program and I live my life by 12-step principles. And what that's given me is, yes, the ability to sit with myself, but it's also given me the ability to really understand myself, what I suffer with, and to have tools that help me almost like retrain, my other words just got out of my head. My
Build
neural
pathways.
pathways, that's it. Yeah, and that is a constant, that is a daily practice. I've done a lot of meditation. I do meditation twice a day. I'm very mindful throughout the day. I pray. I reach out and help other people, especially when I don't want to.
Yeah.
I think as well, knowing that I've got nothing to hide, that I feel like I'm doing some good in the world these days. I feel like I have a purpose. And also, when you are putting these substances in yourself continuously, you're playing havoc with your mind and body.
Yeah.
Removing those in itself helps.
I was going to say that anxiety must have lowered, not using drugs or alcohol must have made a difference.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then you're engaging that parasympathetic nervous system regularly. It sounds really balanced.
Yeah, I mean, look, don't get me wrong. It's something that I have to work on daily. And sometimes I need a little reminder, which is why I have a sponsor. And it's why I also sponsor other women. Because, it's really easy to give advice, but to actually take it yourself is another ball game. And quite often I'll hear myself speaking to one of my sponsees and I'm think, oh, Kate, you need to do that. You need to
Yeah, you need to do that yourself.
do
Yeah.
that yourself. And then I do. So whilst, I am helping other women to get sober, that does help me too.
Yeah.
I also like expand upon my spiritual practices. You know, I think I was built for like a spiritual life. I've always been called a bit of a hippie amongst my friends, but you know, using drink and drugs just completely blocked me off to any of that having any effect. And you know, since I've got sober, I've been on energy medicine courses. I've done a yoga course. I've, you know, I go to full moon ceremonies. I engage in spiritual practice on a daily basis. And I think where I've been more open and receptive to the benefits of that because I'm sober, that is incredibly beneficial.
Yeah. What led you to then stop that final time? Was it that you went to a meeting, or how did that happen?
Do you know what? This is always a funny one because I hear people say all the time, you know, oh, they've got to hit rock bottom. And that just wasn't the case for me at all. I'd had many, many, many rock bottoms during my, you know, during my drinking and using history. But honestly, something just clicked in me. And I don't know what it was. I like to think it's, you know, divine intervention. I was in the garden, I was smoking a spliff one day, and something just went boom, done. Can't do this anymore. I couldn't live like that anymore. You know, I'd gotten to a point where what I was using, it just had barely any effect on me anymore. It wasn't really working, even though I was intoxicated for pretty much 24 hours of the day, because I'd wake up in the night and carry on. So I was never sober, and I just was like, this, who am I? Is this my life? I'm gonna die. I'm gonna kill myself. I'm gonna, by what I'm doing, my children are gonna find me dead. This isn't working. And honestly, the thought of using harder drugs had come into my mind because those weren't working anymore. Alcohol wasn't working anymore. And that scared me a bit. The thought of using even harder drugs than I was already using really scared me. It was literally like it was like something hit me and went, right, these are your choices. You either go down that route and there's no return from that route, or you ask for help. And asking for help is absolutely terrifying. You know, that's one of the main reasons why I do things like this, come on podcasts and do my Instagram and my TikTok, is because I know as a mum how many women there are out there who are so scared to ask for help for, you know, fear of losing their children, or, you know, fear of being judged. And so it's really important for me to stand up and show people, especially women and mums, that, you know, help is out there and recovery is out there. But sorry, I've gone a bit off piste. Going back to your question, yeah, it was a light bulb moment, and I googled those meetings again, and I went to a meeting, and I didn't tell anybody I was going, but I think I was so desperate at that point to change my life that I was willing to do whatever it took. So if that meant losing my partner or losing my friends or even losing my children for a while, I had to get sober. I had to do it at any cost. And, you know, I think I'm one of the lucky ones. I'm one of the blessed ones, because I see women like me who can't get sober. It's just not their time. It's not that I'm any better than them because I've done it and they haven't. It was just my time. And I
Yeah.
don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Don't really know how to explain it other than it was just my time. I went to that first meeting and I listened to the person who was doing the main share, and I could not believe how much I related to what they were saying. I had no idea that there were people out there doing what I was doing in the same way that I was doing it, having the same thoughts as I was having. I thought I was really, really alone. And to walk into a meeting and people were so open and honest and kind and loving, which I wasn't expecting, if I'm honest. It really gave me a sense of I think this is my home. I think this is where I need to be. I remember sitting at the meeting, obviously you go around and introduce yourself, and I was like, hi, Caitlin. Don't really know if I need to be here. Just come to see what this is all about. And by the end of the meeting, I was like, hi, Caitlin, addict. I'm coming back next week and I'm going to get a sponsor. And I did go back, and that was on the 6th of September 2022. And I haven't looked back.
Well done.
Thank you. It's I mean, you know yourself, like it's not always easy. It's really not always easy. And sometimes I can, look at other people and think, oh, it's all right for you. You can go and have a glass of wine now. I can't do that. But it's all about playing that take forward, isn't it? It's about, well, where would that take me if I did that?
Yeah.
I'm not going back there. Those first few months, especially first few weeks, were horrendous. They were absolutely horrendous. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say, do you know what? I did this, I did this, and everything's amazing. That's not the case. It was really, really difficult. Hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I never, ever want to have to get sober again.
Same here. I don't want another day one.
No way. And that sort of healthy fear there does help keep me sober.
Yeah. And I notice as well, you've quit smoking in sobriety as well. You stopped smoking.
Yeah, I did. That took me a while. It did. Do you know what, though? I don't think I could have done it at the beginning when I cut everything else. I think it would have been too much for me. But yeah, on my second sobriety birthday, again, it was something I'd wanted to quit for ages. I'd been writing out and burning to release it at my full moon ceremonies. And something just clicked the day before my second sobriety birthday. I had one cigarette left in my packet, and I was like, it's time. This is your time. And yeah, I haven't had a cigarette since my second sobriety birthday. So I don't know if that's like 8 months ago now. I think it
Okay.
might be about 8 months. But you know what? Out of all of them, that's smoking's a really difficult one.
Yeah.
Really difficult. I look at other people smoking sometimes and I think, oh, it looks nice. Sorry about
That will fade. That will fade. I mean,
that.
I think what am I now? If it is, it must be 14 years since I quit smoking.
Wow. And how
And
long have you not been drinking for?
I'm coming up to 900 days, so you're coming up to 1,000,
Yeah.
which
It's wild, isn't it?
is wild. But again, with the smoking one, I promise you, even that gets easier. I don't look at people with cigarettes and envy them. I just think,
Yeah.
why are you doing that? Mind you, I also think that with alcohol, but I've
Me
completely
too.
distanced from it in my mind. I don't associate any pleasure with either, actually. I see them both as drugs.
Well, they are. It's really funny, and I think people can really look down on somebody who says that they're an addict, and it's like, hey, well, if we went through everything that you do.
Yeah, phone use, obsessive
Yeah.
binge watching of Netflix,
I know, right? It's all
doom
it's happening.
scrolling.
Yeah.
There's plenty of things that people are
Absolutely.
addicted to. The thing is, these are addictive substances. And it's just that you're being honest. Look, I was addicted to an addictive substance, so I don't touch the addictive substance.
It has to be complete abstinence for me.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that I've seen proven that works long term. So that's what I'm going to do. I
Yeah.
can't take that risk. I noticed actually I came off a motorbike last year, and I was in another country, and they gave me these painkillers, and they were really strong. I needed them. It wasn't a very nice accident. And when I got back and I stopped taking them, I was like, oh, okay, these were changing the way I feel. Now, that's not a relapse. I was taking medication because I absolutely had to, but I definitely noticed, like, okay, even these, I need to be careful of pretty much anything that changes the way I feel. I need to watch out for. It's a whole new world, and it's a whole new like life to navigate.
On to that life, then. I asked my guests on here to talk about the three areas of their life that they've chosen that has altered in sobriety. What's your first area?
I would say my first area is that I am a lot more emotionally stable and regulated. My mental health has improved massively since not taking drugs, but also being sober has given me that opportunity to stop and pause and notice the areas of my life that do still need a little bit of work. You know, there's definitely been some instances in my life that I pushed down and really try to ignore, but sobriety's given me the opportunity to be able to look at those things without completely becoming a mess, without completely breaking down. Yeah, so that I'd say that's number one. Also, I think my kids would probably say I'm more emotionally stable as well. I'm a lot calmer than I used to be. In fact, people tell me all the time, like, Kate, you have such a calming voice, and you know, you're always so chilled and laid back. And I'm like, am I? Okay, I like that. That's a nice way to be described for me, anyway. Considering how erratic I was before.
So, with the calmness, is that like an increase in patience as well?
Oh my gosh, yeah, an increase in patience and tolerance. And really, a lot of that is about respecting other people for who they are. You know,
Yeah.
I didn't do that before. It was like I needed things my way. But I've got a lot more patience and tolerance, yeah, because, you know, who am I to try and manipulate or control a situation?
It enables you to step back, doesn't it? And that emotional regulation, that's powerful. That's really powerful to be able to step back, take a breath, take a moment, and not react to things.
Without a doubt, you know, if I'd gotten myself into a situation, like for example, yesterday, there was a woman, I won't go into it too much, but she went absolutely ballistic at me. It was really extreme and actually quite scary. And I was just so calm. But me back in the day, I would have given it back just as much. And then I would have been the irrational, irresponsible one as well. You know, when you can stay calm in situations, you like you said, you know, it's really powerful. I think it gives you a lot more peace
Yeah.
that you can be calm. And I know that's probably doesn't necessarily make sense, but because I don't react, because I, you know, behave myself, I don't cause problems for other people. That brings me peace.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. And who doesn't want peace?
I am here for a peaceful life.
Yeah. Could you have said that years ago? Would that have interested you, a peaceful life?
Would have interested me. It just would have seemed completely out of reach.
Yeah, and here you are doing it.
Yeah. I feel like a miracle. I honestly feel like a miracle happened. I sometimes, you know, I have to pinch myself. Like, is this who I am now?
Or is this who you were all along?
This is who I was all along. This is who I was all, no, this is who I was meant to be.
Yeah.
Actually, I hear people say a lot, I got myself back. I got sober and I got myself back. And that wasn't the case for me, and that's not what I ever wanted the case back to be for me. I never wanted to be the person I was before. I wanted to be a new person.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm a new person. Almost like when we were talking about earlier, and you said, you know, that's with about the sobriety birthdays and being reborn. That's what I wanted, and that is what I've got. But there's become a lot of change with that. A lot of change, you know, friendship groups. That's been a big one for me. I've sort of learned through therapy and the 12 steps and everything that comes with that, that I was quite a codependent person. And where sort of some friendship groups have changed, that's been a challenge. It has been a challenge, but I think it's one of those situations where this is happening for me, not to me.
Yeah, that's an amazing reframe. when we can start to look at things like that.
It is, and I'd say 90% of the time I can think like that. But sometimes, sometimes there are aspects of my old life that I miss. I definitely went through a grieving period, that's for sure.
And we don't talk about that enough, really, do we? That moment that you realize, I'm never going to have that drink again, or I'm never going to sit by that log fire and have my glass of red wine. There's a moment of realization, and I think for me that happened about 5 months when I was on holiday, and I saw somebody drinking on a hot day, and I was like, oh, I'm really not going to do that anymore. Oh, okay. And it hits you. You don't think about that at the start, but it was also a really good thing because it meant that I was moving into the next phase, I think.
Yeah, there's definitely loads of phases and stages of getting sober, isn't there? I think, like you said at the beginning, you don't think that far forward, and rightly so. For me, it was very much one day at a time. And actually, even sometimes one day felt like way too long. I did have to often break it down to minutes and hours, and even, breaking it down to really small chunks. But now when I look back and I think, wow. Those all added up, and I've had so many different learning and growing phases of sobriety, that actually, when I feel now that something's really hard or, it's difficult, I don't like it, I'm not enjoying this, phase or stage, I always come out of it having learned some new skills, being much more resilient to life, and having new, outlooks. On things. And so, although, look, sobriety isn't always peachy and rosy, it's always better.
It is. I like that. So let's move on. So, what's your second area then?
Second area is parenting.
Okay.
Without a doubt, my parenting is really different. And again, that has been a real learning curve. And there's been lots of different stages to that. I think at the beginning, when I still felt really, really guilty for who I was and what I'd been doing, I kind of almost overcompensated for that financially, in particular. And then you sort of get to a point in sobriety where it's like, right, I need to learn about boundaries now. And putting in boundaries with my children has been challenging, absolutely. But children need boundaries. They need to know where they are, what's going to happen, what consequences are. And if they don't have that, they're going to be all over the place. And I was looking at them thinking, why are they doing this? Why are they behaving like that? Why don't they just stop doing that? And it's because, Kate, they don't know where they stand with you. I've really had to work on setting boundaries with them. But you know what? I have a brilliant relationship with all of my kids. And that is thanks to sobriety. And that is thanks to me being able to look at myself and where I'm going wrong. And instead of sitting in self-pity about that, take some action and make some positive changes and ride those waves. Because
Yeah.
everything does a 360, it comes back. It's okay. It's all going to be okay. I often have to say to my children, that's okay if you don't like me right now. I still love you, but my job is not to be your friend, it's to be your parent and try and guide you towards being the best human being that you can be. So sometimes that means you're not going to like what I say, and that is okay. I think I was, almost a bit codependent on my children as well. And I've realized through sobriety that what my role is as a parent, it's not to be their friend. It's not for them to adore me or, think all these great things about me. It's not about that. It's about doing my job properly to the best of my ability. What else in parenting? Actually, what else in parenting is, and this is probably one of my best gifts of sobriety, is that my children always know where I am. I'm always available to them. I mean, yes, look, I go to meetings, I live my life, I do my own things as well. But if they need me, I will be able to come and get them if they're sick at school. I will be able to come and get you. If you need help and you need me to go and run an errand for you, I can do that for you. And yes, I will be at home when you come back, and I will be sober. And you can trust the person. When you left the door this morning, you said goodbye to your mum. That's the same person that you're going to come home to. I think that is probably the biggest gift of sobriety for me.
That's huge.
It is. Look, without the realistic fear of you never know what's going to happen in a day, do you? But realistically, I'm going to be here when you come home from school. I can give you a lift. I can do all these things. I'm not going to risk your life. Yeah, my children are probably the biggest inspiration to me, the biggest reason to be so to not to be sober. That's not correct, because I couldn't get sober for them. They are my biggest reason to stay sober.
Yeah. And what's your third area?
I don't live in a constant state of fear.
Yeah.
And that's massive for me. I was driven my whole life, everything was fear. And I think with fear, there's so many instances where people don't even realize that they're in fear. And look, there's probably still some areas in my life that I don't realize. But that's okay. They'll come to me when they're ready for growing, they'll come to me. But yeah, I was terrified. I was terrified all of the time. I was terrified of my own shadow. I was very, very jumpy. I thought people were watching me. I was very, very paranoid. I thought everybody was against me. I thought nobody liked me. I just didn't think I was good enough for anybody. They're going to know. They're going to know what I'm doing. If a car drove past, I would get terrified. I would sit at the blinds and watch whose cars were coming in and out. Was anybody coming to my door? And at one time, I remember thinking, right, I know what will solve this madness and this fear. I'll get a ring doorbell so that I can watch and see. I get one at the front, one at the back, then I can watch and see everybody that's coming and going. And thankfully, I actually never did that, because I think that would have made it even worse.
Yeah, you've been sat on your phone watching it
I would
then.
have been absolutely, listening out for every single sound that was coming my way. Is that potential danger? I was constantly in that fight, flight, or freeze. I was very, very frightened of my health. I have really, really bad health anxiety. And to be fair, I did get very, very unwell, but I thought I was dying. It was always very extreme. I hear people say a lot, well, the good thing about sobriety is you get your feelings back. The bad thing about sobriety is you get your feelings back. And that doesn't resonate with me, because I always had feelings and emotions. It's just that they were erratic and irrational before.
See, now that's always my argument to people who say that they don't, I want to numb with alcohol. I will always say it doesn't numb anything. What it does is it shuts down your prefrontal cortex, and then you are less rational. So it's not switching anything off. If you're feeling down, angry, depressed, you are going to end up even more so with irrational thoughts, fears, catastrophizing to boot.
Yeah, absolutely. Catastrophizing. Honestly, that could have been my middle name when I was in the madness. I remember
Yeah.
learning about that in CBT, and I thought, oh my God, that's me. Oh,
You owned that one.
yeah. I knew I did that.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think
it's a
I've just
common
got
one,
to.
actually. Catastrophizing is a pretty common one.
Oh, I know, I know. And I think I just have a very much more of a, like, I guess, a let go and let God, like, outlook on
Yeah.
life.
Which is made a heck of a lot easier by the fact that you are clear of anything raising your cortisol levels from a biological point of view, isn't it?
Absolutely. But you know what I've even noticed since I stopped eating sugar? That has made a really big difference to my regulation, especially like my hormonal cycle. It's made a huge difference. I didn't.
So interesting.
Really interesting. And if I'm really honest, I thought stop eating sugar would actually help me lose a couple of pounds, and which it hasn't done that for me. But I would rather the improved emotional regulation that I've had from stopping the sugar than losing any pounds.
It is amazing when you start to remove things and you go, actually, this is how my body's meant to work. This is my body now in balance. So what would you say to yourself if you could go back to yourself at the start of your sobriety? Would there be any advice you'd give to yourself, or what advice would you give to anyone at the start of their sobriety?
I would say to remember that this is your journey. It's not everybody else's journey. You may get a bit of backlash, and that's okay. It's not your job to bring other people into sobriety. And to trust the process, because honestly, it's not easy. There are going to be some really difficult days, but trust the process. It gets easier and it gets better, because if it didn't, I wouldn't still be here. So on those days that you're struggling, make sure you reach out to people who get you and get your thinking. Can potentially be a bit of an isolating journey and experience, but that doesn't need to be the case. There are lots of women, especially, I found you on social media. There are so many ways to find like-minded people, whether that is through social media or whether that's through going to meetings, or, there's sober women's groups all over the place now. Find your people. Find people who get you and your thinking that you can relate to.
It is really important to find people that get you, because there might be some people in life, like friendship groups you were talking about earlier. It's not that you have to lose friends in this process, but you might find some of the dynamics might change, or they might not. And so you want to be able to talk to people who really do get it.
Yeah, I really needed that relatability, especially at the beginning. That's the reason why I do what I'm doing, because I know that relatability is really empowering, and to
It
know that you're not alone, that's huge. Yeah, I kind of feel like I was given this gift of sobriety and this massive life shift, and the best thank you I can give is to share that with other people, particularly women. Look, if I help some men along the way, wicked. That's an added bonus. But I do feel really strongly about reaching women and mums in particular, and letting them know that, I hear you. I understand recovery is possible. We do recover. It
Yeah.
is possible.
Now do reach out and ask for help. It has been so lovely talking to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and speak, on here with you, because I know that you've inspired so many women and you've supported and helped so many other women. So to be able to be here with another woman talking, addiction, recovery, sobriety, I feel so grateful, and I really appreciate you having me on here.
It has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for listening today. If you'd like any support with your sobriety, then please reach out. You can visit my website, louisaevans.com, where you'll be able to send me a message, and you can look at some of the things I've put together to help you. There are links to my Dry January podcast, my audiobook on Audible. As a clinical hypnotherapist, as well as a therapist, I have created lots of different hypnotherapy recordings that you can listen to help you on any subject. You'll find those on the website too, alongside my Sober Resilience course. As a listener of the show, you can use the code SOBERREBEL to buy one, get one free on any hypnosis or relaxation recording. I really hope you enjoyed this show as much as I enjoyed recording it. Have a great day. Until next time.